Hello and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 27. Hello, Brandon.
Hello, 27.
That's 27. It's you and I today. We're just going to jump right into it. Before we started, though, I wanted to say two things. First of all, so I actually, after about three or four weeks, I went back and listened to a couple of the podcasts that we did. And because I normally don't ever listen to it because I'm just like, you know, you hate hearing yourself talk, or at least I do. But some of it was pretty good. Although one thing that I want to commit to is working on a better introduction. I feel like, you know, I kind of inherited the job of doing an introduction by default, and I'm not particularly good at it, especially when we have guests on. I'm terrible. And so I want to commit to giving better introductions. So like by this time next year, I'm going to give introductions that are so deep and so moving that everyone's going to be in tears. So I just want to, you know, I want to work on that. I'm going
to
aim high.
We need to get the guy that, like, I'm trying to think of a good orchestral score. Who's the guy that does all the Batman movies? Not Danny Elfman, the new ones. The German dude. Anyway,
I don't know.
That's the guy you want. And and you want to have like Michael Buffer start announcing the podcast, like.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is he the guy who has the trademarked "Ready to
yeah,
Rumble"?
Yeah, you can't say that. We'll go to jail or whatever.
Okay, I won't.
but like, yeah.
Let's be unprepared for silence.
So let me get this straight. So you're a longtime podcaster, first time listener. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Good.
Pretty much. Except when I used to edit.
Well, Charles, I'm just glad to have you as a listener now. I appreciate that. It's nice to have you listening to the podcast, and it's just good that you that you're getting to appreciate your own work.
Yeah. So how about you? What have you been up to? You just got. I think we haven't podcasted since you got back, right?
We have not. We released it after I got back. So it was in the Disney worlds, the entire world of Walt Disney.
Yeah. How did that hold up? I know I haven't been to Disney World in about 25 years.
Okay, so you just have to you have to stop talking now and just go. You have to immediately leave. I know you want to go see your family in Finland this week, but instead,
I got to let the cleaners into the house at 10 o'clock.
Nope. Do not pass go. Okay. Do not collect $200 except to buy two days worth of tickets to Disney World. It's just for me personally. Just go. And forget all your cares and your family. It's terrific, man. It's terrific. I learned a lot. I need to ruminate on this a little more, but people that go to Disney and then go to other parks start categorizing things into Disney and not Disney because of the craftsmanship and attention to detail that goes into every element of the experience of a person there, from the time they drive into your parking lot to the time that they leave. A cynical person could look at that and be like, yes, they want to capture all of the experience so they can capture all the revenue, but they just really they really want to guarantee that people have a really good time, and they do some stuff that borders on creepy to make sure that that happens.
Like, what can you be specific?
Yeah, like, okay, so I have a 2-year-old and she was getting a little fussy periodically, and every time she looked like she might be maybe about to start the first stages of a 2-year-old fit, a person would appear out of thin air, because there are so many people there working that you kind of, they're all uniform, and so you don't, they kind of hit your peripheral vision. The person appears out of nowhere almost magically, hands them a sticker and says, "Oh, hi, princess, would you like a little sticker?" And they and elicits a smile out of a kid who's just about to throw a tantrum. And
wow. One can imagine these like arrays of security cameras in some dark room where there's people in Snow White
but it's
and
not,
Prince Charming uniforms, like, doot, but doot, the, doot,
instead
doot,
of
doot, it's, meltdown alert,
they
send in a sticker.
I don't know what technology they use to make this happen. I've heard people say that they do have some technology to make sure that there is never more than one of a certain type of cast member above ground at a time. So it's like you can't have two Jasmines or whatever. It's really fascinating. It's really well executed. Everybody there seems to take their job really seriously and sees a role in providing a great experience for the people that come across. And there's a lot of like there's a lot I want to take and digest from that as, in my work, but I don't know what it is yet.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty.
It's pretty authentic.
Yeah, for being completely manufactured.
Exactly. For being completely and totally based on fantasy, it's very authentic experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was interesting. So.
Because that's actually kind of the kind of mental block that I've had is, I know the people are super, super excited about it. And I don't know, I haven't been just because I worry about it being inauthentic.
Well, it's kind of like
being like extractive, like SeaWorld, for example, despite the whole public controversy over the Blackfish documentary and whatever, going to SeaWorld, it's like, it felt like this place was designed to like siphon money out of you as quickly as possible.
So and without, think about it in terms of like a movie of like, like something in a movie, a bad special effect, or you see the seams in it and it breaks your suspension of disbelief. You like want to go have a good experience in a movie, but people keep, you know, you see somebody do the thing with, hey, take this picture, enhance. And you're like, or they do something in programming and completely breaks your, shatters your suspension of disbelief. And what Disney does is, hey, listen, we want to really protect that suspension of disbelief, knowing that, hey, you want to buy into having a good experience and it's ours to mess up. And most parks don't put a lot of thought into that because your goal is to go ride some fun rides and they throw them in a collection and maybe roughly group them in areas. And Disney really wants to they work really hard to protect that the suspension of disbelief that you are there to have a wonderful family vacation and see some neat stuff and ride some fun rides. And then if you start paying attention to if you're the kind of person that appreciates these kind of details, it's sort of compounds the fun of going because you notice all the little things that they do to try to protect that and do that.
Right.
And just so just admiring the craftsmanship of the architecture and the experience and the way that they run things is instead of it being sort of feeling like you're in a casino and you look everywhere and there's cameras and everything. And like if you've ever been on the Vegas Strip, you know, you go one block in either direction and you're suddenly in like the seventh circle of hell. And so it feels very artificial and very like Potemkin Village. Like Disney feels it feels very committed to its own ethos instead of it being like, all right, we'll extract some money from the saps. So anyway, that's all I got to say about it. It was really cool experience. I have some stuff I want to sort of digest and think about how that might apply to software. But that's not our topic for today, is it?
Yeah, that is or is not our topic. We can pivot.
We're good at that.
I have people do that in software.
Yep. It's something that sometimes people do three or four times until you're Twitter.
Tell you what, we'll sit on that. You can kind of digest it, and you can come back with us next week about
welcome to the front
Disney
side
and software.
Welcome to the front side, where it's a 30-minute podcast where people send 140 character messages to each other. I think that's our pivot. Is that
there
taken? I don't know.
I don't know. It might be.
All right. It's a Simpsons Quotes podcast. Yeah. So you had a really cool idea, I think.
Yeah. I wanted, there was something that I wanted to talk about. And it's because it's something that I feel is worth talking about. And it's something in particular that you've been very instrumental in implementing here at the front side. And that is kind of the way that we talk to each other. You know, we have kind of from very early on, you know, you have taken it to be extremely important that people feel, have a good sense of that they're kind of on the right track in the work that they're doing. And that if they're doing something that they can improve upon, that they can get that feedback very immediately. And so, you know, it's been kind of an off and on thing, but getting to that point where, you know, we can have these very honest conversations with each other, because I feel like that the ability to be completely honest means that you can kind of you can improve yourself and you can improve your skills and you can improve the way that you work. And there's not any bad feelings around it, but it's like, it's not something that you can just do. You have to like earn it.
Well, there are forms of,
do you see what I mean?
There are forms
like, you can't just come in and start being like, we are a brutally honest company, and blah, 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 and we're just going to like, and so it's not that at all. That's not what I'm saying. And so I just was, you know, wondering, you know, how is it that you see that, and how, you know, how is it that, you know,
I do have strong opinions about this, and I formed a lot of them. I think people don't realize the value of bad experiences. I think when we talked last time about senior people, and what I wish, one of the things I wish we would have said is like you can get a little too into war stories, but the reason we like to swap war stories is they're ways of exchanging tokens of, hey, listen, I have this pain, and so I have some experience that comes from pain, and a lot of times experience that comes from pain is some of the most valuable experience. I don't know how to run a business, but I know 500 ways that I don't want to run a business. And you and I have both worked at some, you know, good places and crummy places, and they've all had stuff. And it was there are two principles that felt like they were almost completely absent in every workplace I've ever worked. In terms of when you say honesty, it's not like, hey, Charles, does the shirt make me look fat? No, your face does. Like, it's a different kind of honesty.
Right.
Of, hey, do I have do I know how I'm doing? Like you just said. And so,
right.
There are two parts to it. And one of them is this sort of like three-part question of, what's my role here? What's our purpose here collectively? And how am I doing at my role in that purpose? So if I know what our broader purpose is, what my role is, and that all of those things shift over time. And if you don't check in periodically and let people, and most frequently, how am I doing? And if you don't check in periodically and honestly let people know that, hey, man, you're doing great, you're exceeding expectations, or there are some things that we need to work on. If people don't know that stuff, that's a very frustrating way to work and live.
Yeah. Because it is those things are happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Like those, you know, they're you know, the role that you're playing either fits into, you know, the business as a whole and with everybody else, or it doesn't. I mean, it's not quite that binary, but you know, the point is that, you know, there's always room for improvement. And yeah, if you're realignment, even, like, the problem is improvement almost puts like a value judgment. Like, sometimes it's just, you know, we're driving this way and we just need everybody's hands in the car. So they don't get whacked off. And
or like if people are it's another thing to, like, that style of communication allows you to have the kind of the sort of honesty that says, hey, listen, I know you're really good at this other style of work or technology, but that is not what is needed right now. Like, mm-hmm, what is right. needed is for everybody to pull together on something that you're not quite as good at. And so you're not going to hit a home run on that, and that's okay. But we need everybody moving in this direction right now, because that's
right.
Like, everybody's leaning to the left right now. And I know that you're right-handed, and but like, the wind is blowing in such a way that everybody needs to be on the left side right now.
Right. So, right. So that's, it's like, and that conceived that way, it is much more value neutral, right? It's not about doing a good job or a bad job. It's about doing the right job.
Yep. Yeah.
Like the right job for the current context.
Yeah, I read some stuff on Twitter recently that was talking about, like, I believe it was Sarah May, and she's like, I mean, we've talked to her before. She's one of my favorite people, mm-hmm, too, one of my favorite thinkers in software, to be honest. And she had said something like, people tend to take that kind of feedback very personally, and mm-hmm, it is, and sometimes bosses want you to take that feedback personally, like, because they want you to go back and try to do better, and. Like, there's no value judgment to that. You need to really depersonalize that and realize, like, no, that right. is for that environment. That environment is trying to get something out of you that they want. And sometimes that's different than what you have to offer. And once you kind of transition through a few jobs, you realize you have some places that fit you better and some places that fit you more poorly. And right. like you said, there's no value about you associated with that, but it's very easy to take personally. And so part of the skill of communicating that is not making it personal from.
Yeah. And I think that tendency to take things personally, I think that actually is a very natural and very, in some cases, healthy reaction. And I say that meaning that in a low trust environment, you know, taking it personally is a way, I think, is kind of your body or your psyche's mechanism of propelling you out of that situation. about saying, you know what, like, screw you guys, I'm going home. And so the way that you counteract that is to have a very high trust environment where it's like the intent is all beneficent. Like, you know, we want to all work together towards the same goal and we want what is best for you. And so if you have the, you know, that high trust environment, which is very hard, I think, to establish, or it just takes work like everything else and intention. But that naturally counteracts what I think is, you know, a very clearly very natural, because people do it, and in some cases healthy thing to take things personally, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Like if you are literally in a snake pit, then like your reaction to be like, oh, I got to get out of here. This is terrible, toxic environment. I could get bitten and like killed at any moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that would be a very low trust environment, and so you would want to get the hell out of there and have nothing to do with those snakes. I'm sure there's some very nice cobras out there. I don't want to.
So that's actually kind of. So earlier I mentioned there are two things. One of them is this sort of proactive style of communication that I don't see a lot of, mm-hmm. letting people. And I want to dive before we, you know, break this whole party up. I'd like to explore some more about how we do that and the consequences of not doing it. And but the other half is exactly what you're talking about, is creating a high trust environment. And I don't know as much how to create it other than how to know if you've created it. And so mm-hmm. like my criteria, and this is like my canary in the coal mine, is an employee here should never feel like they need to lie to us about going to a job interview. I never want somebody to say, I'm going to the dentist, and have them to go to a job interview. I want to know that they're going to a job interview. I want to help them. I want to encourage them. I want them to come back and tell me what, hopefully we've had a robust enough communication framework beforehand to help them understand like what we could be doing different for them to want to go to a job interview. Like, and
right.
And then,
I want to point out, this is not just a hypothetical. We actually did have this happen, and it was very enlightening for me personally to see this kind of play out where, you know, we had someone basically looking for another job and we were actively helping them. And it was really, the whole thing just felt very natural and easy.
Mm-hmm. And they got to come in and say, hey, this is the offer. And we could say, well, this is our offer. But in our minds thinking, gosh, this is the thing that this person should probably do for their career. If our goal really is not just to maximize profit or whatever, if our goal really is to help people, then we need to be looking at that from the perspective of that person and not from just purely from a business perspective. And then assume that that will come back around to our business eventually. And that's worked out pretty well. So it's one of those places where we got to put our money where our mouth is. And some of the stuff for that we don't talk about on the podcast because it's embarrassing failures. But this actually worked out really well. And we get to be friends with the people that leave. We have a alumni system, basically, an alumni network of people out there that used to work here that we're all good friends with. And there was no drama really, other than this person's personal torment between like, gosh, I really like where I work, but I have this other thing. Like, yeah, well, I'm sorry, you got to work that out for yourself, but we're going to be a support and not a not something that you have to worry about negative consequences, you know? Like, so right. So the decision being made is more on the fear of missing outside rather than the fear of destroying relationships or whatever. So that's just one small example. But I really want, and we don't do this perfectly, obviously, but like
this is something that we're, you know, I'm certainly just discovering the value. I mean, in all honesty, this is something that you have really championed. And just I would say in the last 6 months, my eyes have really been opening to it as something that's just really super wonderful. And something that I don't want to lose, and something that I want to continue and be intentional about doing, and making sure that we don't lose it, and that we continue to do it. We don't have it all figured out. That's certainly not what I'm taking from it, but you know, we're still like exploring this.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about like, because something that you've helped me do is like I had this idea and this like sense that this is the kind of communication style I want to exist in order for a place to be a healthy place to work. But what I didn't realize is how much work that is and how much discipline it requires. And I've always been like, hey, let's not formalize stuff because it'll be, you know, it's more fun and cooler if it's flat organization and everybody just kind of hangs out and we just bro down and crush code. And like everybody, you know, like everything will just magically fall into place. And it actually is very intentional and very deliberate to maintain this stuff. And so you've been very you've been sort of my backbone on this deal in terms of you know, giving some of these ideas teeth by forcing us to adhere to them. I get a lot of, I don't want to say lectures, but like let's run down some of the stuff that we do and don't, like the stuff that we do and what happens when we fall down on it. Like, what are some of the ways that we keep that up, like that keeps things kind of the wheels greased in the communication side?
So, I mean, the first thing that we do is, you know, we just check in with people regularly. Right. So, you know, what we do is we say either once a month, no more than once every 2 months, we're going to go out to lunch with one of our employees and we're going to have an honest conversation. We're just going to have it be a very casual but very honest forum about things that they're doing, like how they think their job is doing, what it is that we need for them to be doing right now, and if that is in line with you know, what kind of they see their object if they're aligned with those objectives and those expectations. And you know, the last couple times that this has happened, it's really felt more like, you know, not quote unquote hashtag real talk, but more like kind of rearranging the furniture in your living room to be more appealing for everybody involved, like having a discussion, changing a few things, and really just kind of calibrating the instruments. But having those regular lunches, those regular meetups where there's an express purpose that the organization is committed to making sure that you have the gauges and the dials to steer your career here.
And sometimes more often than not, those feedback loops are, we get more positive feedback as a company than I think we're going to get. Like, hey, things are actually going pretty good. And we give more positive feedback, I think, than people are expecting to get. They're expecting to get, you know, like, no, the people are generally harder on themselves than needs be. Mm-hmm. And typically it's like, no, you're actually exceeding our expectations right now. And they're like, yeah, but it's not perfect. And you're like, yeah, no, that's fine. That's not the expectation. let's clarify this a little bit. And then sometimes it is negative. Sometimes it is like, hey, this isn't going as well as we thought it was. And the problem is, those are harder to have. When you know that you're facing down an experience where you're about to have a tough conversation with somebody, it's very easy to put that off. And one thing that I have absolutely learned with 100% accuracy is that bad news does not age well. And so holding off having that conversation, and employees holding off having that conversation with you where you come back after, maybe you skip a month and you come back after 2 months and expectations on either side haven't been met and you have this discussion, that's a lot harder to swallow. And I think a big chunk of that deal where somebody's willing to give you tough feedback about your you know, their employment situation before they go off and give you that feedback by leaving, is giving them that kind of feedback and saying, hey, here's the expectations and this is how it's not getting hit right now. The times that we've had those tough conversations have actually yielded really good results too.
Yeah, I would say that you really have been 100% committed to having those tough conversations and upfront. It's really admirable and something that it's a behavior that I see in you that I aspire to.
Maybe it's just because maybe it's because I like feeling like I'm going to throw up. Like it never gets easier. Well,
it never gets easier, but one thing that, you know, you have taught me is that behind every single one of those conversations is an opportunity for connection and intimacy and, you know, ultimately a raising of that trust. So there's kind of the bridge between the honest conversation and the place of trust and how they play between the two of them and how they augment each other, because it really is like a chicken and the egg type thing. You need the trust to have the honest conversations. And by having honest conversations, you build the trust. And so, you know,
that's
really
pretty
is additive.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about the but I like the idea of that being sort of the bridge is that and it's not just the like again, it's not the brutalness of the honesty.
Right.
It's the purpose of the honesty of coming from a place of love and being like, this is the only reason if I did not think that this was going to help you in some way, I would keep my thoughts to myself. But I think knowing this will help you, and it's really important to communicate it. And it almost always, in a business setting, is almost always, and I would say in a lot of relationships, almost always about expectations. Most of the time that there is friction or drama in these settings, it is because there's an expectation that one person holds that another person isn't meeting. And I let that crush me sometimes as an employer and an employee, that other people's, I feel the weight of other people's expectations so heavily that I just kind of collapse underneath it sometimes. And the only way I know personally to alleviate that is to communicate that and to say, hey, listen, are these the expectations and am I not hitting them? I've learned that carrying around the weight of those expectations and the feeling that I'm probably missing them is a lot worse than hearing that I'm missing them. Because there's nothing I can do about it until I actually hear about it. Until I can't come up with even a potential solution until I know there's an actual problem.
Right. And most of the time you're way off base.
Yep.
You know, just like when you're making assumptions and decisions with incomplete information, you actually, you know, you make the best judgment you can, but so often you find that the things that you think are a problem are not at all. The things that are, you weren't even on your radar.
Yeah. And so like for us, like what I've noticed is frequency is more important than any other kind of planning that we do. Having a schedule and sticking to it on these communications is vastly more important than making sure that you've got an agenda. I would way rather have no agenda, no thoughts going into it and have this like every 2 weeks than do it every two months with the world's greatest plan. The times where you and I will have our weekly meeting or not have it. And when we don't have it, we notice that things start to slip. And it's and when we do have it, things go better. And I don't have anything more scientific than that. It's just things go better when we regularly communicate we have like a weekly business meeting where you and I just sit down for half an hour and talk through things. And when we don't do that, things start like just the center doesn't hold so much anymore. It's really it's a weird phenomenon because I don't know how to study it any more closely. And I'm kind of scared to, because I don't want to break whatever's magic about that.
Yeah. Well, it is.
Maybe
really
that makes me a bad programmer.
People's I think what's interesting is that people's feelings and people's opinions and people's, you know, kind of their trajectories, they really are, you can, you know, align them and kind of tweak them and move them and move them around. And, you know, if you don't do that and you don't take the time to actually organize, I like the analogy of kind of organizing furniture in your living room, it will ascend, it will descend into a jumble, and you'll have, you know, a bunch of stuff scattered around the room and you just have to pick up, you know, it's just easy to navigate through your house when it's organized. And the sugar is exactly where it always is, so that when you need to cook something with sugar, you can reach up into the pantry and grab it. And so it's just important to constantly be, you know, checking in and organizing and just making sure that
the only thing that doesn't hold up about that metaphor is like the thing I would add to it is the chaos monkey of the fact that little elves come in every night and rearrange your crap a little bit. Every day we come to our business, it's different than it was the day before. Every day is a little different. We have, I mean, think about it a year ago.
Sure.
We have a completely different group of people than we had a year ago. Like we're a bit like larger and we tackle different problems and a different, you know, like it's.
Right.
It's
okay. Well, so different. You think of it as like the kitchen. Then, you know, you have a different clientele. You maybe one night you're catering. One night you've got a wedding. One night you've got, you know, a crush of customers. One night, you know, there's maybe only a few people and you know what you're going to be cooking is different, and you know the volume and the tactics that you're going to have to get there, but it helps to have your knives in the same place.
Yeah.
Or everybody know what the plan is.
I want to study that.
They can react in unison to a particular situation.
Yeah. There's got to be some sort of like collective collective direction, and it does shift, and the individual contributors shift, and their feelings about it shift, and not acknowledging that is so silly. Mm-hmm. Not acknowledging the fact that people feel differently from day to day, that some days you come to work and you're sad, and some days you come to work and you're excited, and not acknowledging that and not being able to take that into account in people's work are all the things mm-hmm. that I felt like were super broken about workplaces. That we wanted to do differently, and then you're like, okay, well, let's do it differently, and then you realize why it's not different in most places, because the natural state of things is to not communicate because it's so much harder to. It requires so much extra work, and then you start weighing like, wow, doing all the extra work to do this actually costs us a lot of money, and you know,
right? Like, until you actually taste the benefit, it's hard to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, it's just like if someone were to tell you, hey, you've got to do this communication, and they're describing, you know, they're describing how wonderful it is. Unless you've experienced it directly for yourself, you know, it's hard to see why that investment of time, which is money, is worth it. But
you know,
it's
you know
so
what'd be really awesome.
And thank you so much.
yeah, it would be really awesome if
for being the champion of that.
If people would, my purpose in this is not to. It sounds weird. My purpose is not to run the company that I always wanted to work for. It was for that company to just friggin' exist, you know? And what I want is for enough people to start demanding that from their workplaces that I can relax and I don't have to do this anymore. And we're like, and our employees can go work at other companies that do this better than we do it. You know, I want that to be sort of like a movement that people get into is that style of communication. It's more than it's more than just having a one-on-one. It's about having a level of trust and honesty with your with mm-hmm. people. And if I want feedback from other people. If people that are listening have things that they think are working really well, or things that they wish they would see differently, like it would benefit us a lot to have that kind of feedback come from people. It's certainly a subject that deserves more exploration. But we are super out of time. As always, Charles, this was a fun sort of thought-provoking moment. I guess we'll get back to technology again soon.
I'm gonna have to go back. I'm gonna listen. One thing I noticed is I'm so intent on the conversation, especially when we have these kind of deep discussions, that all your jokes just sail right over my head, and I apologize. That's actually one of the reasons I like to go back now and listen to the podcast, is I get to appreciate all the funny things that you say.
I don't know if you're like me.
Thud against my forehead like a ball of putty.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And anybody, I think anybody that does podcasting will understand how much you're sort of engrossed in like not trying to like flub up and just right. basically trying to tread water through the podcast. And then you go back and listen to it, cringe through your own part, and then actually get the insight from the other people. So I totally get it.
So, yeah.
All right, Charles. Well, I'll work with you. Go have a wonderful whatever day this is. And
all right.
We'll catch up with you later.
All right. You too, man.
See ya.